People are demanding more from life, and many of the old scripts they inherited are outdated and bring nothing but anxiety and stress. Does this sound familiar? Individuals in the world itself are experiencing a tremendous shift in energy and consciousness, and while unsettling at times, it can be the ride of a lifetime if navigated properly. That's where this show, Mind to Heart, with me, Craig Richardson, carves a pathway from your mind to your heart to activate that innate compass to overcome whatever life sends your way. So won't you join me for this powerful, inspirational, and fun experience? And let the journey begin. Hi, my name is Craig Richardson, and welcome to Mind to Heart. In this show, we take a journey from our logical, critical mind to the more powerful life transformation heart center. And along the way, in order to do that, I bring in interesting guests who not only have a professional and intellectual background, but they've also had quite the journey themselves. In the past month or so, we've experienced two major events that speak to one of the greatest journeys or one of the greatest myths of all time. And that's the trip taken by the Magi to visit the child Jesus. So the first of the two events we'll be getting into is the celebration that Christians call Epiphany, which occurs generally around January 6th. Now, the Catholic Church more formally has gone to the Sunday after the New Year's in order not to make another holy day of obligation, but there are still plenty of the Christian faiths that celebrate January 6th as the Epiphany, which essentially closes out the Christian season. And contained within it, and as a child, I loved this story, and still do, actually, we have a manger scene and at home, is a visit by what St. Matthew simply describes as wise men. And then he goes on to say, they came from the east. While the Bible doesn't tell us their names, tradition holds that there were three of them, Gaspar, Balthazar, and Melchior. And I know that my guest will help clean that up because that's probably not overly accurate in terms of the pronunciation. And again, according to St. Matthew, they brought three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They were following a great star to locate the new king of Judea, which signifies a second great event that we've had in the last month ourselves. And that was the Great Conjunction, which happened on the winter equinox on December 21st. It was the conjunctions of the planet Jupiter and Saturn, which hadn't happened in the night sky in nearly 800 years. It's what the Magi followed over 2,000 years ago to locate the Christ child. So with me today to decipher these two great events and to give us some background into who the Magi is someone who's dedicated a life to studying Persia and Iranian history. We will hear more of her personal journey in the second half hour, and I want to bring her in now to shed some light on these wise men and help us to understand how their journey can help us understand our own. So welcome to Mind to Heart, Sheeta. I'm so delighted that you've joined us. And again, with your background, I think because the Christmas season is so full of things, we tend to short shift the Magi. I mean, it's a great story, as I said, but it's after New Year's and people are kind of ready to go back in the New Year. And so I'll ask, just begin with a simple question. Who were they?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, Craig. Your topic today is quite ambitious, and I do not profess that I am necessarily an expert in the field because, as you can imagine, Iranians, Persians were one of the most famous branches of the Iranian people, have at least 5,000 years of history, and I can't imagine being an expert in that. The Magi, who are part of their religious and spiritual and philosophical beliefs, is in of itself a whole field. I would like to, from the beginning, advise your listeners, if they like to learn more about Zoroastrianism and the Magi, to refer to the Gathas, to refer to Mary Boyce, who really intellectually and scholarly handled the topic, and to Dr. Stephen Flowers, who esoterically has great books out. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Sure.
That my views and my ideas are based on the readings that I've had of these various people who dedicate their time to this specific topic, this particular topic. And before I say, you know, we talk about who were the Magi, I thought, since our audience you know, where we're in the United States, I always try to focus on information that can relate to Americans as your main listeners. And I thought they might find it interesting of how influential the idea of magi were in the American intellectualism by reading just a short excerpt from a 19th century poem by Herman Melville called Clairol. And the poem is considered the longest American poem, in which there seems to be a spiritual crisis. There's a questioning of the narrative. So it's interesting that that is seems to be one of the analysis of the poem. But here's the excerpt. "And periods unforecast come on, recurs to me a Persian rhyme. Flamen put away, robe and mitra glorious. Doubt undeifies the day. Look in vapors odorous, as the spice king's funeral pyre dies the Zoroastrian fire on your altars in decay. The rule, the Magian rule is run, and Mithra abdicates the sun." So who are the Magi? Why are they in their American literature and philosophy? One thing I have noticed, I teach history, and one of the things that is perplexing to me is that it seems to prior to World War II, Americans were quite aware of Zoroastrianism to some respects, the Magi, Cyrus the Great, Darius the Great, and it seems that something's happened since then, and that's not the topic here today. But I do want to clarify for you and your audience that the word Magi is not generic. You do not generically use it for a wise person. It is a specific name for a specific people, and these people were Iranian wise men who followed and practiced the Iranian ethnic religion, which we call Zoroastrianism.
Can you just give us an overview of what that is? Because that's probably a common term to you, but like you said, and I'm in that post-World War II upbringing, I don't really, I mean, I've heard of it, but I don't even generally know what Zoroastrianism is.
Right. So Zoroastrianism considered, and I will quote from experts in the field, people who are scholars in the field of either religious comparative religion or specifically ancient Iranian religion. So Zoroastrianism is named after an Iranian reformer. I don't want to really kind of refer to him as a prophet because these ideas already existed and he somehow reformed them and organized them. And his name was Zoroaster. It's believed he lived about 4,000 years ago, but that's to the Greeks, it could have been later. There's some dispute exactly about that. But if we look at the text and the language, 4,000 years ago seems to be something we can agree upon. And he's considered the person who described the world that we live in as the world where the battle of good versus evil takes place. He says the underlying premise of this world is that. So this dualism, this battle, is the inherent cultural idea for those who live in Western civilization, which is what my focus is. I'm more focusing on the influence or the footprints in Western civ because I live in that society. And there are a lot of branches off of Zoroastrianism that those who have studied comparative religion or have studied religion know, such as Mithraism, Manichaeism, Zurvanism, and very modern Sufism. These all are branches of Zoroastrianism. These are Indo-European way of life and thinking. Iranians are one of the oldest Indo-Europeans, meaning their language is of the same family as those who speak English, French, German, Spanish. So obviously that's going to get mixed with other groups of people, for example, such as Semitic beliefs, but the beliefs can be a bit different. So Zoroastrianism is considered as the religion that explains this world and which highly influenced Judaism, which will influence Christianity, Islam, the three very popular religions today. So indirectly or directly, Zoroastrianism is considered one of the most influential religions and philosophy in the world.
And their introduction really was really that introduction. I mean, from the Christian perspective, again, turning it around and from our myopic view, that was epiphany, meaning a manifestation, so that was where we, and of course they use the term Gentiles, that was where Christ was presented to the Gentiles. But as you're saying, of course, the cart came long before the horse. I mean, it was really the foundation. And when we get back from our break, I'd like to talk a little bit more about, you know, specifically what drew them roughly 2020 something years ago to this child in the middle of nowhere, really, in Bethlehem. So when we get back, we'll get more into their actual journey. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Diane McClay. I'm comfortable being in front of people. How to make things work in a structured format made me feel a little nervous. Everybody I have worked with on the Transformation Talk team met me with enthusiasm. Their confidence in me spilled over to me and allowed me to just grab onto it and say, oh yeah, that's me and I can own it. Thank you for showing up for me. Thank you for allowing me to put my gifts into the world, and thank you for making me look good while I do it.
Are you ready to branch out? Take a leap of faith. Tune in to Get Rooted Radio with Erica Gifford Mills on TransformationTalkRadio.com to equip, empower, and enlighten yourself. Erica will energize and excite you to power up your passionate dream that sets your soul on fire. So get fearlessly ready and get powerfully rooted in your yes to live it up, love it up, and let it go. Visit GetRootedRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Laura Goldstein, and here's a Coffee with the Universe tip. Ever wonder why you want to go to the gym more, for example, but you just can't make it happen? You find yourself rearranging your underwear drawer instead of getting in the car. If this sounds like you, you might have caught a case of the shoulds. Maybe you think you should lose 20 pounds to fit back into your favorite pair of jeans, or that you should be healthier in general. It all sounds good, but deep down you just aren't into it. Truth is, making choices from shoulds just leads to guilt, resentment, and a whole lot of procrastination. So take a good look at your goals. Are you shoulding yourself anywhere? If so, give yourself permission to let it go. For more insights like this, tune into my Transformation Talk radio show called Coffee with the Universe. It's a live call-in show. I'd love to support you.
Transition, simultaneously the most difficult and vital part of the human experience. Without change, how would we grow? Tune in to Grounding Into Your Radiance with Stacey Barber every second and fourth Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Step into your truth and allow the light into your life. For more information about Stacey and her services, visit StaceyBarber.com. That's Stacey, S-T-A-C-I-E, Barber.com.
TheAngelLady.net.
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 TheAngelLady.net. 1-800-323-1790. 1-800-323-1790. Sue Storm.
Sue Storm.
TheAngelLady.net.
Hi, and welcome back to Mind to Heart with your host, Craig Richardson. For those of you who want to get a hold of me, you can reach me at my website, craigerichardson.com. Sheeta, before the break, we were talking about how the Magi, who they were, Zoroastrianism, and the fascinating perspective and why we're talking about them today is because in the mostly Matthew's gospel, but other ones, we hear this story about how they followed the star. So obviously astrology and things were part of that. But what was it specifically of them that made them sort of come into this drama that ultimately became the Christian faith? What were they doing out there?
Well, I don't I don't think I can claim to that I could be able to answer that. We're talking 2,000 years ago. But if we look at it as a historical perspective, if we look at what's going on around it, and we have to look at what the Magi believed in, then maybe we can get some understanding as to what maybe happened, or at least the traditions that were left behind for us to learn from. As Zoroastrians, they would believe that this world is about the battle of good versus evil. They would believe, as Zoroaster taught, that humans are active in this fight and that humans are good. They're not born sinners. They've come here to use their free will to choose between good versus evil. And evil can be anything that, of course, brings lower vibration, chaos, and destruction. So you can fill that up with just about anything you can think of. For example, being in debt was considered a sin for Zoroastrians, because if you're in debt, it will lead you to lying. It will lead you to do things you should not be doing because you have a conscience. So the Magi are of this belief. And they're of the belief that the good versus evil is in the mind. It's actually the mind. Good mind versus Angramanu, angry mind. Remember that Persian and English are of the same family. So they're going to sound the same when you pronounce it. It's not how you write it. It's how you pronounce. So it's the mind being able to decipher falsehood, being able to get beyond fear, being able to understand deception, okay, having that kind of a understanding. And also in Zoroastrian belief and creation and what is happening in this battle of good versus evil with Ahura Mazda, the wise lord, versus Ahriman, or the devil, because you have to understand that the concepts of devil, you know, demon and angels, resurrection, Soshayant, which would be a savior, these concepts are Zoroastrian. So it's important that we understand the underlying concepts that will be adopted and brought through the populations who may not have been Indo-European or Iranians to begin with, but they adopted these concepts. They lived under that. At the time that Jesus was born, which scholars date him to either 5 or 6 BCE, and some place him at 12 BCE, not the year zero, but a little bit earlier, there are two superpowers in the world. So we have to look at the historical here. One being the Roman Empire, specifically would become the Eastern Roman Empire, because that's in Asia. The battleground is in West Asia. And then you have the ancient Iranians who've been there forever, their empire. And there are different dynasties in play, of course. But at the time that Jesus is born, he's born in an area that is very much the battleground between the Romans, who are the newcomers, the invaders into West Asia, and the Iranians. The dynasty are the Parthians. Hence, when you say parting shot, you're referring to the Parthian Iranians. That's in our language. We say the parting shot, okay? There's so much history involved in our religious quests and spiritual quests. You cannot study one outside of context of the other.
I find it fascinating that as you talk about with the background that they brought, that they really, it almost seems in retrospect that they were entering this drama, this scene, which we sort of see again myopically with a lot of what you just described, because a lot of what, and maybe that was kind of their way of saying, hey, this is coming originally from ancient Persia, and the concepts you mentioned, good and evil, sin, I mean, those were all adopted, as you know, by the Western faith of Christianity.
I mean, right. Well, you have to realize that one of the pillars of Zoroastrian beliefs is the end game, the day good is victorious, and we get out of this three-dimension idea of duality of good versus evil. When is that day? Hence, the Magi were obsessed with calculating time. The Persian calendar is considered the most accurate calendar. They were obsessed with time, calculating time. And in their belief system, the last 3,000 years of the world was divided into 1,000 years, which anytime humanity needed help, remember, humans are volunteers here to help. They're supposed to use their free will to choose between good and evil and which side they're going to be on. A savior will come. Help. So it's not that God is born. It's a savior coming. Okay. So they're in that mindset of when things are really bad, where is the being who's going to motivate people and attract people to bring them together to stand, okay, against this power? And if we look at the time that Jesus is born, you are talking about the time where the area of Judea, Bethlehem, and Syria, that whole area, the Levant, are the battleground between the Roman Empire and the Iranian Empire.
I guess some things haven't changed over 2,000 years.
No, they don't. We are in the same cycles of events. Nothing is new under the sun. It really isn't.
So it's likely they did see him because the star was in Judea, which is why they went to Judea. They saw that as a sign of a king. At least that's the way we understood it. And they saw him as probably, to use your term, savior, which, you know, Christian term as well. So they did see something there. And then they brought those interesting gifts, gold, which would be benefiting a king. You know, one of them was, I think it was frankincense, is a bombing fluid. I'm not sure why
myrrh,
you show up.
Myrrh
is bombing fluid. Why you would show up to a baby shower with bringing bombing fluid? It was always a question that kind of stuck with me over the years. But there was serious significance. But they clearly came to pay homage, I think, and maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe it's along those lines that they did see him as something that was going to transfer them to something, to one of these end times. I don't know.
Well, the way I look at it is Herod is installed by the Romans, and the king that was supported by the Iranian powers is removed. There is a power struggle of legitimacy. If you're going to rule a people, whether it's real or an illusion, there has to be legitimacy, and people have to feel that those ruling them are just. Without justice and without legitimacy, the ruler is in big trouble, and it's going to need a lot to protect himself or herself, and we'll be looking over their shoulder, because that's just the bottom line. Those are the most ancient rules for someone who wants to preside over a population. So you have the ancient Jewish population who have, since Cyrus the Great received, who was a Persian king, received their freedom and their freedom of religion. And they considered the Parthian Iranian, in their old saying, they said, wherever you see the Parthian horse, know that freedom is right behind it. You've got the political struggle going on. Legitimacy of who's really here that can rule the locals, okay? And here come the Magi. Now, I thought your listeners may find this interesting. At the time that Christianity becomes legalized, okay, by Constantine the Great, in which it starts to flourish, the Iranian Empire is worried. They're Zoroastrians, remember, but they have all kinds of religions. They have Jewish religion. They have people converting to Christianity. They have people in different religions. They're concerned about the political aspects of their own Christians in their own territory. So the Iranians create their own Christian church. It's the Church of the East. Mm-hmm. So the Church of the East has a book that's dated to 13th century called the Book of the Bee, which the bishop wrote, the bishop at the time. You may hear it as a Nestorian. Nestorian Christianity is Iranian Christianity. Yeah, mm-hmm. In there, he says that Jesus was born in Bethlehem. The star appeared to the Magi in the East, and 12 of them went. So I find it interesting that our traditions, modern, say 3, when in the Iranian version, they say 12, and they name all 12. They all have Persian names, and they take those gifts. And we know, those who are into esoteric learning, that 12 and 3 are all significant numbers.
Yeah. Well, I think partly they said 3, as I did a little studying, partly because there was only 3 gifts. And I think there was tradition that there may have been more, but, you know, we sort of simply, in our American Western way, we kind of simplified it. But
yeah, well, gold is kingship on earth, and you have frankincense, which means priesthood, and you have myrrh, which means death. So they're bringing symbolic gifts for what they believe to be the Soshayant coming at the end of this 1,000 years of ages. Someone who is ordained to come and help, because we're in a struggle. See, there's a lot going on in the background. We're people who live in the material world. You can't separate politics from our life.
Well, and the death is an important thing because when you are a true Christian, you can't get very far away in that faith without understanding of what, how his mission ends. His mission ends on the cross. So he's, death has always been associated with his journey. So I think that's a, you know, a valid point. And the other interesting thing I find is that, so this was also at the end of an era, right? We were just entering into the Piscean Age, and just as now we're entering in. So that was that. Some people, the timing differs depending on when you believe that the Piscean Age ended, began, and when it ends. But we're clearly in another one of those transitions right now.
Absolutely. It feels that we are, certainly. And also the political arena around the world is showing that there's a time of turmoil. It's going to affect people's spirituality and self-awareness, regardless, one way or the other.
Well, when we come back, we're going to transition from the Magi's journey to Sheeta's journey, and we're going to talk about how you've made that, certainly culturally and historically anyway, in terms of what you study and professionally, you've made more of an incorporation, I would say, with the Eastern background that you have with your, you know, your family and your culture to, as you said up front in the first segment, about what it is to be in the West and in America. So when we get back, we'll hear more about your story.
Hi, I'm Brittany Miles from Miles to Go, How to Lose to Gain It All. I have a mindfulness practice to help you face difficult emotions. It's called RAIN. Developed by Tara Brach, the letters mean the following. R, recognize what's happening to you. A, allow the situation to be as it is. I, investigate feelings with interest and care. And nurture yourself with self-compassion. So you see, RAIN isn't so bad after all. Tune into my show to learn more. See you on the 2nd and 4th Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, here on Transformation Talk Radio. Feel free to reach out to me at miles2gocoaching.com. That's miles, the number 2, gocoaching.com.
Tune in to The Crooked Climb with Suzanne Taylor King and Denise Stiegel, committed to guiding your journey through the world through mindfulness and personal care. These ladies are rebellious, real, funny, and powerful, helping you realize your full potential while navigating the twists and turns life always brings us. Tune in live every 2nd and 4th Friday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You've been listening, but are you watching? Tune in to your favorite shows on the Transformation Talk Radio Facebook page. We stream live video podcasts every day, and we love to hear from you. Leave comments and questions for the host to address live, on the air, and get to know the faces behind the voices you love. Just go to Facebook and search for Transformation Talk Radio.
Yeah, yippee skippy to that, baby.
The vibration of change, that magical place where life shifts from struggle to ease, from stagnation to forward movement, from old ways of being to new ways of becoming. If you're like I am, it can be rather elusive to get there, but when you are in it, you feel it down to your very core, don't you? And it can positively affect everything in your life, from your relationships to your health and well-being, from your career path to your abundance. From the quality of that inner connection to the fullness of your self-expression. On the Christine Upchurch Show, we explore ways to get into that vibration of change with experts in the fields of consciousness, psychology, spirituality, health, healing, and science. Join me, Christine Upchurch, every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on KKNW AM 1150 and Transformation Talk Radio, and learn new ways to step into your vibration of change.
Hi, welcome back to Mind to Heart with your host, Craig Richardson. Again, if you'd like to get more information about me or this show, you can visit my website at craigerichardson.com. Well, Sheeta, now we're going to transfer from the journey of the Magi to the journey of Sheeta. And I guess let's just start at the beginning. I know that you, you know, you have Persian descent, but you also have Irish descent, as I think you've told me one time. So, you know, where were you, where did you grow up? Where were you born? Your parents, all that? What was that like?
Sure. Well, I'm half American, half Iranian. And just to clarify, I know we keep saying Iran and Persia, and I think that's an important thing that I teach when I teach history, because it's something that's not properly addressed. Iran means Aryans, and there are many different groups of Iranians. Persians are one of them. They've become the most famous because of their historical position. So we tend to use it interchangeably, but the Persians are not the only Iranians. We have many, many tribes. Some stayed in Asia and some migrated to Europe and became founders of Europe as well. So in a Western civilization context, they are Iranian by bloodline and or ideas. So there is an ancestry there. But yes, I had both cultures, but when I was young, so my first language was English, but when I was young, 4 or 5-ish, we moved to Iran, and this was during the great time when the Shah was there. So I have really great memories, and I was there for elementary years only, and then we had the revolution. So we
came 78. You had to
79.
Mm-hmm.
79.
I mean, yeah.
So I was there for elementary years, and of course I learned Persian, and I think that somehow that was probably something in my psyche. Obviously it would have affected having been there, and of course speaking the language, which helps now if you're going to learn about the culture. And then we moved back to United States, and you know, pretty much normal everyday American type things.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Missouri.
Okay. Show me state. Yeah.
Yes. So Midwest, and that was it. But growing up, I don't think I was as interested. I wanted to be like everybody else. So you don't become as interested in what makes you a little bit different. So I didn't really pursue much when I was younger. And it wasn't until I was well an adult that something happened. And I think that's really the Magi journey you want to know about and what led to that.
Sure. And what was that? I mean, did you have an epiphany, so to speak? Or was this something that, you know, did you pursue it in college? Did you have an intellectual interest? You obviously had, as you said, the grounding in your culture, but was there something in particular?
Right. I find it interesting that I pursue what I pursue now because none of that was in my family life. We were not, you know, into learning about our history or not that they didn't speak the language or do the typical above the surface type culture where you have the food and you're aware of the music and all that, which is very superficial on a cultural level.
Cultural. I mean, a lot of people today do that.
Right. Cultural. It's not that, but the intellectual and the understanding the native, what is it that Iran makes it unique? America is unique in modern history. Iran is unique in ancient history, period. It's what is it that was so unique about it? That was later in life. And I think that's very much like the Magi. To me, the Magi journey is answering your call. There's a calling and you answer it. And we see that, for example, Indo-Europeans are famous for their epic journeys. And now today, a lot of movies have these epic journeys. And I mean the Greeks, the Romans, the Persians, they all have epic, epic stories with heroes and so forth. It's that time where the hero, if you're watching a movie and the hero goes on a mission, doesn't know what's going to happen to him or her. And you, the audience, are thinking, why are they doing this? Why? And you can't understand the why.
Yeah, the great call.
That hero cannot explain the why. That is called the calling. And if you choose, because you have free will, to go with the calling, then you're triggered, you're activated for that.
It's what Joseph Campbell calls following your bliss. And sometimes people, it's not an easy thing to do because people will say, what are they doing? It's like Plato's cave. They're turning around. How dare they turn around? Where are they going? And it takes a brave soul, I think, to do that. And
there is really no, there's no material gain in it. See, we talk about magic. Magic, of course, is a Persian word from magi, because the magi were considered as these people who knew how to connect the material world to the spiritual world, okay, through cosmology and rituals. And so you have, magic comes from that. You have heard of white magic and black magic or sorcery, right? It's how you use the art. Do you use the art for self-learning, self-awareness, developing and unfolding, and perhaps in that process, helping the world defeat evil? Or do you use the art for personal gain, short-term, no interest in self-development? And those are the sides.
Sounds a little bit like they were obviously very influential in The Alchemist, because that sounds like what the alchemists were able to do.
Alchemy is definitely based on Zoroastrians. The secret societies, esotericism, Gnostic, their foundation is Zoroastrianism.
And you use the term Indo-European, which you, because you and I are good friends, and you, I hear that a lot, and I'm not even sure I can define it, but can you just explain to people what you mean by Indo-European?
Sure. So if we're going to start to study ancient history, we have to look at the different groups of people that had a ancestral language and culture. Now, over time, within these groups, they started to split as they started to move and spread out throughout the world and migrate. So Indo-European, for example, more than 50% of the world population speaks an Indo-European language. German, French, Spanish, English, Iranian languages, Hindu, which we called Sanskrit. Mm. So that's one family. They would have had their own beliefs. They would have had their own language, their own culture. And then you have, for example, another large group that would we now, a lot of people would know as Semitic, for example. Mm-hmm. Semitic would be Arabic languages, Hebrew. Assyrians, okay, and we've heard of even Assyrian in ancient history. They're still around today. I mean, they haven't disappeared. Mongolian and Turkic being one group. So there's all these families, but they also have the culture.
Yeah, and obviously those are interlinked. And I want to get back to your, because when we last left your journey, you had heard the call. And what was that for you? What were you doing prior to, and what, how did that call come to you? And then what did you do follow?
Well, it may be a cliche, because we always seem to, when we study about certain people, there's something in the early years of your 30s, 30 to 33, it seems to be a trigger year. So it's very clichéic, but it's true in my case. I'm not saying that everybody hears the calling necessarily around that age, but for me, probably around that age, I actually started to have very strange dreams. And for those who may be aware of spiritualism and mediumship, which even in our mainstream religion, mediumship is there. Okay, we know about dreams, prophecy, spiritual healing. Those are all in the Bibles and all kinds of religious books.
King Saul went to a psychic to figure out who this young upstart King David ultimately.
Yeah.
He'd actually banned the practice and said he banned the practice worldwide. Then he would say, "Well, I need some information, so I'm going to go to the source anyway."
Yes, I mean, you can't separate the mind from the spirit. This world, we're of both, and so to best properly navigate is to use both. And so I started to have dreams, and I started to pay attention to these dreams, and one thing led to another. And 20 some years later, I have degrees in the area. I have written my doctorate thesis on it. I teach part-time about the topic, and it just unfolded to so many different places. I just allowed it. There are no financial material benefit to it at all. It's completely personal and spiritual growth.
Yeah, I think that's a sign of a true calling, is when you walk away from whatever it is. I know you also work in the law, the area of the law, that when you actually find something outside of finances. And, you know, the other clear sign is when everybody in the family thinks you're nuts, which which has certainly been part of my,
you know, that's the calling, and you can't maybe explain it to people, but you choose to follow the calling, and everybody has their own time for that. And some may choose to disregard it. It is free will.
Right, right. And I think that becomes the, you know, the classic case of ignoring the call is obviously Jonah and the whale, right? He didn't want to do what God said, and he ended up in the belly of a whale for 3 days. So, you know, sometimes they'll continue to nag and have that call. But I think those are the sad souls, the ones that, because they know at some level that they're not, that they've ignored that. And I think you see, but we're going to take another break. But when we get back, I'd like to get into a little bit more of what you just discussed in terms of, you know, what, because you and I together know each other from the spiritualist church, but what you actually did kind of spiritually since, you know, once you heard that calling, and, you know, we'll do the last segment talking about that. So we'll pick that up on the other side of the break.
Okay, sounds good.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Hello, I'm Carrie Kadambi, and this is your Spirited Exchange Moment. Have you been searching everywhere for answers? Do you long for wise guidance to lovingly direct you? Guess what? You have your very own divine spirit guides in the highest light, available 24/7, just waiting to help you live your best life. Call in your spirit guidance on a daily basis to help you make important decisions. All you have to do is ask. With a sense of openness, curiosity, and willingness to be divinely guided. Throughout your day, be open to notice what shows up for you. A spoken phrase, a book, a message from a song, or simply a knowing. And always offer gratitude for that loving guidance, and don't forget to put it into action. Join me on Transformation Talk Radio for my show, A Spirited Exchange. For more information about me, visit thedivineguidancegift.com.
Are you ready to shift your current beliefs about death? From debilitating pain and loss? Follow Angie Corbett-Kuyper as she shares that through choice, present moment awareness, and keeping an open mind. Anything is possible, even in death. Tune in to Beyond Proof Radio with Angie, redefining death and loss every first Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit BeyondProof.com.
Healing has a ripple effect. One person's healing affects everyone around them. This is where the power of sharing our stories can be so important. Tune in to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Megan provides you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. Enact the power of radical change. To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hi, and welcome back to Mind to Heart with your host, Craig Richardson. Again, if you'd like to try to get a hold of me after the show or in between, my website is craigerichardson.com. Sheeta, as we went to break, you had indicated just prior to that you had had this transformation or I don't know, hopefully it wasn't a midlife transformation. Like, I had mine a little later. I didn't get the sports car and the blonde, but I came pretty close in terms of having the wheels come off. But You indicated at that point you really went to what Carl Jung would say, you know, finding your more authentic self. You had developed in 33 years is about right, which is why it happens. You sort of do all those things to learn. And then at a certain point, you realize, you know, what you're going to keep and what you're going to discard moving forward. And you said a lot of these were dreams. And as you indicated, that, you know, all the religions, including Christianity and Judaism, have that dream as a way of communicating. We do it every night, and we have our dreams that clearly communicate. Carl Jung, as you know, is a big person that was into dreams and dream study. But what specifically did you do? What were you doing sort of professionally at the time that you had that transition? And then what did you do to kind of feed that calling, as you put it?
Yeah, so my intellectual or my regular job never changed. I still do it. And I do enjoy it. It's what I do in a material type of world. And we have to function here. We've come here and we have to function within the parameters of this world, which involves materialism and intellectualism. However, it's keeping that balance, because in Zoroastrianism, any excess is defined as evil, any excess, too much, too little. So being kind of in the even-minded, being kind of in the middle, that doesn't mean your convictions or your principles not being solid, but in order to be able to balance the two, I believe I was probably always spiritual, because I was always very, as a child, very passionate, very aware. The littlest things, I paid attention to every detail, and it just excited me. That was just already my personality. So the spiritualism was a calling. I chose to follow it. And so my regular job has remained, and it's still the same. I still do the same thing I've been doing.
Quit your day job, huh?
No, and I love my day job, and I've been there for many, many years, same people. But the spiritual was another avenue that I pursued.
Like me, you started, because when I joined the Catholic Church, a lot of why I did that was from the intellectual. I studied church history, a lot of which kind of went up just to where your history would have gone beyond. So you pursued these PhDs, right? And masters and.
Well, my pursuit of what I consider spiritual was not on the intellectual level. It was spirituality that led me to the intellectual, because I wanted to understand it. In other words, I didn't want to just have dreams. What is that? I wanted to understand, what is it I was dreaming? Who is coming to my dream? What are they trying to tell me? Because on the surface, in the material world, that's not what's being told to me. So it was that questioning the narrative, okay, that allowed me to pursue it. So if I am of a historian of any kind, I am not the historian that's going to just look at the box and give you the box. The box is your foundation. I go outside of that for the information. Hence, my doctorate is in education, looking at how Iranian and Iranian history is being taught in college level textbooks. It's not a PhD in history. To me, it wasn't significant, although I would love to, because you have to make a choice in cost, time, and so forth, to get a PhD where I may find the, you know, something amazing in some ancient text no one's interpreted or what have you. I wanted to say, what about the stuff we already know that we're not being told? That was important to me. So I pursued it on a different level.
You teach here in the local Virginia area.
Yes, I teach as an adjunct, but I try to bring that inquisition to my students, and I try to show them, and thank goodness we have internet in class. There was a time where we didn't have that luxury, that you can say you have this at your fingertips. It is your responsibility to learn. It's your responsibility to question and find the answers. So I just make them, you know, you show them the foundations, you teach the foundations, and then you go beyond that. And you hope that the inquisitive mind remembers that. They may not do it now, but maybe in the future. In any field that they're in any field, you want to be out of the norm. You want to be that creator, that creative, you know, in some way.
Well, and then where our journeys and our paths cross is in the spiritualist church here, and again in the Northern Virginia area. You preceded me into it. What was it, the dreams and the things and your ability sort of to hear messages from the other side? How did you get into that whole path of spiritualism, where you and I, as I said, now see each other at least on a weekly basis?
Sure. So for many years, the dreams started to lead to just knowing in the awake state. In other words, when I started to trust my dreams and keep dream journals and reflect on them. And again, this is a life of action. So dreams are not replacing your actions. You're responsible for actions. But then it started to get to a point where dreams were not as significant because I noticed I was seeing things, like really seeing things, knowing things while awake. And that could be even just doing my regular job where something comes to you and says, did you look at the document B again? Look again. That those types of weird stuff. And you're going,
intuition, yeah.
If I hadn't taken a second, I could have, it could have been a big mistake or I could have missed something. I'm talking about that it actually became something useful in the material world. So I kind of used it that way in a, just took it for granted, trusted it and took it for granted for many years. And I didn't understand what it was. I didn't define it. I didn't say this is mediumship of this kind or that kind. I didn't even understand it. Unfortunately, I lost my son in 2019.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's quite a tragedy. I don't know how to explain that.
Can't imagine.
There are parents out there who've lost their children at different ages and different stages. So it's, I understand now how it feels. I couldn't really prior to it. But that was probably the trigger. First of all, I was grateful I was spiritual because I think it helped us. It helped the family and me to cope with the new reality because it became a new reality. A change in reality. The Magi journey is about the change in reality, okay? It's about our awareness and consciousness that things aren't what they seem to be. And so, or there may no longer be what they are. It's that pain of knowing that you have to step into the new reality. You know what I'm saying? In that level,
yeah.
When that big change comes, often people, they're frightened, they feel, there's so many emotions going.
Well, and it was amazing to me, just your strength. And I didn't actually know you at the time. I think I met you probably about 6 months later. I found out over time. And what really struck me, and I think this is the strength of you as a person, but also the strength of your spirituality was that parents literally the worst nightmare. And you still had a sense of joy about you from the moment I met you. I mean, you would have been maybe one of the last people I would have imagined who would, there's trying times, but and now I think with your spirituality, you still have a communication with your son, but you've strengthened yourself through that somehow through by going through that. And I think that's one of the most impressive things I know about you.
Well, with my son's departure to the other side, then all of a sudden, all these years of just experiencing something and accepting it, I wanted to know what it was. I wanted to know where he went and where I'm going to be going. So all of a sudden, my shift and my purpose changed. And when that shift and purpose changed, then the calling went a different way. And now I'm at a phase where I believe that my son, through me, perhaps can help others either deal with a crisis, and God forbid if anybody has to deal with that kind of a crisis, or just a personal journey to be able to handle that. So it just changed. The reasoning to follow the spirituality and where it's going to take me shifted. But of course, I had that preparation before. I couldn't jump into it if I didn't have all those years of it.
Yeah, you had that foundation. And now, you know, you're helping others. I mean, not only are you said you're an adjunct professor, but, you know, you've been actively teaching, you know, at church, you've been speaking and you host circles and you're taking what that tragedy and you're turning it into really a teaching moment for anybody. And so for that, I really applaud you. We only have about a half minute left. Do you want to say anything in wrapping up? I liked your way of saying the Magi's journey. I think that's certainly you, but I'll give you the last little bit before I close out.
So I like to encourage people, spiritualism has so many different aspects and so many different things, and it comes to people differently. So one person's journey is not going to be like someone else's. And that awakening is individual. The awakenings are not groups. It's because, as Zoroastrians believed, you cannot coerce the consciousness. It's free will, and people experience it differently. But I think people should incorporate whatever way they get spiritualism coming to them, whether it's a dream, whether it's a notion, whether it's a hunch, whether it's a feeling, because they're part spirit too. And that's just part of the world. It works a little bit better. It helps us understand a little bit better, because in this world, we are so restricted and limited in how we can see and understand and perceive. So to me, spiritualism is something God-given to help us, especially at a time of maybe a time that it seems dark or chaotic.
Well, I think that's a wonderful conclusion and summary that you put there. And I think, like the Magi, we just need to follow. We need to follow the star. We need to follow our star, because connected, we are all part of the stars, right? And connected to that ultimately is our heart. And that's where we find love. So Sheeta, I want to thank you so much for spending your lunch break with me today for the last hour. And for my listeners joining us on Mind to Heart, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me, and I enjoyed the topic, of course.
Thanks for listening to Mind to Heart with me, Craig Richardson. My path has led me from the Protestant and Catholic churches, as well as studies in alchemy, mediumship, Eastern philosophy, and most recently, Edgar Cayce and transpersonal psychology. As an intuitive life coach, I am ready to guide you to an amazing life. For more information about me, visit craigerichardson.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.